It's 6 minutes past one.
Good afternoon, and welcome to a WFPL News special on the Sherman-Minton Bridge closure. I'm Gabe Bullard. This is a call-in hour, so let us know how the bridge closure has affected you, or call with a question for our guests. 502-814-8255 is the number. news@WFPL.org if you'd like to email. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter at WFPL News. With me now are Matt Bullock, Louisville Chief District Engineer for the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. Joining us by phone is Will Wingfield, spokesman for the Indiana Department of Transportation, Barry Barker, Executive Director of the Transit Authority of River City, or TARC, and Lieutenant Doug Sweeney from the Louisville Metro Police Department. For disclosure here, I should say, Lieutenant Sweeney, your sister is WFPL's Susan Sweeney Crum.
That is correct.
All things considered. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll go ahead and get started. First of all, Will, I'll ask you, since Indiana oversees the inspections of the bridge, or oversees the bridge, what exactly is wrong with the Sherman-Minton at this point?
Okay, well, it's hard not to get very technical very, very fast, but a crack was discovered uncovered as part of some of the maintenance and retrofit work that was taking place on the bridge, and that crack is small in nature, but in terms of its impact on the bridge, it's huge. So it was analyzed overnight Thursday. The recommendation came to NDOT on Friday to close the bridge. We conferred with some of our experts on a national level in the private sector, the academic community, and our own in-house staff, and the engineers concurred and NDOT followed their recommendation to close the bridge.
And this is then a crack in the steel itself?
It's a crack in the load-bearing members. The design, construction, and materials used for the Sherman-Minton Bridge is unique. There aren't many real comparisons around the country of this type of bridge, and that combination, along with the crack itself, is what led to the bridge being closed. And you know, it's underneath to go more technical. It's underneath the Kentucky, the span closest to the Kentucky side, and in one of the tie girders specifically that hold the bridge up.
And is it a stress fracture sort of crack, or is it a large deep crack? Can you describe that a little bit?
Sure. The crack penetrates into the base metal of the tie girder itself. In terms of the cause of the crack, that's not fully known at this point. It's there. We need to do something about it. Our understanding of the crack will likely be in the context of preventing future ones such as this from forming in the future.
Was this a routine inspection that found it, or had there been special inspections going on?
Bridges that are have large spans or are complex or fracture critical in nature require more rigorous inspections under federal requirements. So, we were inspecting the bridge to satisfy those requirements. Those inspections began in the spring, but then also to satisfy our requirements that bridges be safe for the motoring public.
And what's the status of the inspection now? We've heard it would be 3 weeks until you would know the extent of the damage or what could be done. How's that looking now?
Right, and that timeline still holds. We were able to bring more crews in to perform testing, analysis, and inspections of the bridge so that we can pursue that work quicker. Obviously, traffic is not moving across the bridge. One of the other things that we'll need to do is ensure that it's safe for contractors work on the bridge. Currently, they're focusing in on the span closest to the Indiana side while we determine the safest and most permanent repair to the crack that was discovered last week.
Is this a situation where the cracks could be repaired, or would the beams have to be replaced?
Really, at this point, we don't know that information, and when we do, we'll share it with the public. The potential options there run the gamut.
How long would this take? And Matt, feel free to jump in here. How long would it take to do that sort of repair, either to just repair the crack or to actually replace a beam?
Will, I think you need to take that one.
All right. Again, we won't have that information for approximately 3 weeks, and certainly sooner if we do. But that's the question everyone wants to know, and we want to answer as soon as we can reliably. Speaking to the repair, we want to make sure that That's done in a way that causes no further harm to the bridge. We also don't want to kick the can in terms of you know, making this repair. We want to make sure that the repair that's done is more permanent in nature and will allow the bridge to the crossing to reopen and be in service for some time.
And while the bridge is closed, there is a new traffic plan. I'll turn to you, Lieutenant Sweeney. What has worked so far with the traffic plan?
About everything, believe it or not, that we've tweaked it and moved people around. But today, for example, I was there this morning. The three lanes coming across from Indiana into Louisville was a good idea. It allows more traffic to flow across it. We've blocked a couple of access points from 64 West, for example, to 65 North. Some people are not understand why we do that, but in short, it with the traffic coming from the other direction, there's a crossover point, and that backs things up on a good day, and we want to eliminate that. Today, as I was watching traffic, 64 West and East and 71 North and South were actually probably a little lighter than a normal day. And one of the guys at Trimark, where I've been watching traffic, joked that if it keeps getting this good, we'll consider closing the Kennedy, too. So this traffic has just been really great. And honestly, the public deserves an A+ for following some of the things we've said as far as leaving earlier, the traffic buildup earlier, giving themselves more time in the afternoon, finding alternate routes, paying more attention. The fact that we've had good weather and maybe a couple of minor collisions has been a blessing. But all in all, the control of the traffic lights along 2nd Street has been probably a major factor, and just the public cooperation.
Has anything been done to prepare for an accident on the bridge if there is something more severe, or maybe a large tractor trailer stalls out, something like that?
Yes, sir. We have one and sometimes two wreckers detailed specifically to our morning rush hour and afternoon rush hour. Try to keep one on the Louisville side and then one on the Indiana side when we have two. That way, if something happened, we could have a wrecker up there quickly or somewhere anywhere along the interstate. And we also have a couple of roving cars, we call them, that are just in the area should there be a breakdown and we need to get someone there quickly. And again, Trimark has their interstate trucks that help motorists, and we have them about to. They're freeway service patrols. They're available and monitoring and ready to get to any incident on the roadway and push them out of the way quickly if we have to.
And is there any more tweaking of the plan, you think, in the future?
A little bit, but really it's going to be a downsizing. We found that we kind of overstaffed it at first, which was a good idea simply because we wanted to make sure if we had areas we didn't cover, we'd have available personnel, and we have shifted things around. I was actually out of town when this occurred and wasn't aware of it until I came back, and the sergeants that worked for me in conjunction with the DOT and Trimark and other entities came up with a great plan, and we'll probably reduce the number of personnel at some of the intersections along 2nd Street, just we found they're a little bit superfluous.
And can you maintain this plan for the indefinite future?
We will maintain it as long as we have to. We have to get, you know, we're not just talking about inconveniences, we're talking about commerce. And you delay large trucks and people doing business long enough. I mean, each minute literally costs thousands of dollars that you have a lane of traffic blocked. And so we need to keep things moving.
And there is someone who just wrote in, they asked, why close the ramp from 64 westbound to 65 south?
It's both 60. It's 65 north and south.
Oh,
is not accessible.
Yeah, for the same reason. It just we're trying to avoid a choke point that, there, like say, during normal traffic, that can become those directions become a choke point. And the closure was it was the simplest way to avoid what could be a major problem when all the traffic is coming at us, inundating us in the mornings and afternoons. And it's an inconvenience, but it's a diversion to route around and come back the way you need to come from the other side. I think people would find that if we had it open, there would be greater delays and more inconvenience to them than if we had it closed, and a greater chance of collisions.
And going back to Matt and Will, we have heard that 80,000 cars about went over the Sherman Minton every day. And so how many of those are going over either the Kennedy or the Clark again?
How many more than we're normally going over?
Yeah. Is it safe to say that all 80,000 are going across either the Kennedy or the Clark bridges?
The majority of those, I'd say, are going over those bridges as additional traffic. Just for an example, somebody that works out at my office out on Westport Road that lives, I believe, in the Greenville area, has said that they've tried going down Corydon to Mockport and crossing over the bridge there to Brandenburg just to try it out, and it was approximately the same time. So it gives you a perspective of what kind of time frame we're looking at, but the majority of that 80,000 cars has got to go over either Clark or the Kennedy Bridge.
And are the bridges able to handle that? Pardon me.
Yes, we actually, as a cursory review, we have some crews out on the Kennedy Bridge this afternoon. They started this morning. We do a inspection of those bridges, both the Clark and the actually all major Ohio River bridge crossings. An in-depth inspection every 2 years, and then every year we do what we call a joint annual inspection with Indiana, where we do a more of a, what we call a kind of an eyeball and arm's length look. But we do have some gentlemen up there today. You may see them if you're driving on the interstate, that they're actually up on the top cord members of the Kennedy Bridge right now, just kind of doing a cursory review. And right now, we don't have any reason to believe that there's any issues with the bridges.
But the Kennedy is made out of that similar steel as the Sherman Minton, correct?
That's correct. There is some T1 steel on the Kennedy Bridge as well.
And the T1 steel, the issue with that is?
Well, it's a high-strength steel. It's about 30 more thousand pounds per square inch, stronger than your standard steel and used in bridges. The real issue there is it can be brittle under very cold temperatures, but there's really not any issues, per se, with just using the steel. It's used in tension members mainly because of the higher strength, and those tension members are the ones that are more critical in a large bridge like that.
So these inspectors who are out on the Kennedy Bridge right now, is that the inspection, the full inspection that was scheduled originally for Monday?
No, the Monday inspection was our arm's length joint annual with Indiana. The full inspection on the Kennedy Bridge was actually completed in November of last year. There's some things that from year to year we look at, such as cracks that have been there since 1990-95, cracks that we make sure that they're not growing, they're not getting deeper, and we found that those things are not getting any worse, so there's no issues that we found with the bridge on the last inspection.
What about the Clark Bridge?
Clark Bridge is in a similar state. It gets the same type of inspection that the Kennedy does, and it's safe as well.
And that bridge has a lower capacity than the Kennedy, correct? It's a much older span.
It is older. I can't off the top of my head think of when those opening days were for those bridges, but it doesn't have the capacity that the Kennedy does, mainly because the Kennedy has 7 lanes right now, and the Clark only has 4, so you can only get so many cars on there.
For how long will the bridges be able to handle this extra load before that stress starts to show?
Well, I don't think anybody can answer that. I guess really the bottom line is that we, on a regular basis, inspect those bridges and look from year to year to make sure there's nothing that pops up that wasn't there before. And so far with both those bridges, we haven't found any of those issues.
But is there a concern in putting this much extra weight on the bridges every day?
Well, I mean, there's a concern with additional traffic. I mean, every bridge across the United States starts to deteriorate the day that it is opened or the day that the construction is in. So additional traffic, it's kind of like if you have a stressful life your entire life, you may die quicker than if you did nothing, but it's just hard to say. I mean, bridges have useful lives, and additional traffic may or may not reduce that useful life. But as of right now, we don't have anything to go on as far as any issues with the bridge.
And Will, you were coming in?
Yeah, and I think it's something important for people to remember is that, the actual weight of traffic is not the only force that's taking effect on the bridge. We've received both in Indiana and Kentucky a lot of questions about, whether traffic on the two remaining bridges would be able to handle the additional load. But keep in mind that, the bridges also are, themselves make up quite a bit of weight of steel and concrete. That's part of our concern with the with the Sherman-Minton Bridge is that it's not just the weight of traffic, but also the weight of the bridge itself. And so looking at the whole scope of things, traffic, obviously there is weight being put on that bridge by traffic, but that's not a primary determining force in terms of just the overall lifespan of the bridge. It's all the forces that you need to take into account. So we work very closely with Kentucky, not just on the bridges in the Louisville area, but all of those that run along our shared border with Ohio and Kentucky. And we take bridge safety very seriously, and obviously we want to make sure that while the Sherman-Minton crossing is closed, that we are able to maintain detours that are safe.
And one question about repairs, Will, I'll let you field this one.
Okay.
An email from Rob: does the Sherman-Minton Bridge have interchangeable parts? Could old beams be unbolted and newly fabricated beams slid into place? Since the arches carry the load, it seems like the deck parts could be unbolted and replaced.
In terms of the different connections, you've got bolts, you've got welds. Not everything is bolted. Technology and research continues to advance in material science, in construction techniques, and fabrication techniques. So for whatever repair is necessary, we'll likely make sure that it reflects the best thinking and knowledge of today. The technical engineering analysis behind it to ensure that what's being put in place will last as long as possible. The Sherman-Minton Bridge itself was very innovative when it was open to traffic nearly 50 years ago. But at the same time, just the engineering community, their knowledge has advanced quite a bit since then.
Is it an obsolete design?
It was classified as functionally obsolete when the bridge was last inspected 2 years ago. In terms of its obsolete design, you could build a bridge that was a tight arch bridge. It's less redundant than other types of bridges. So I don't know if it would be a preference among structural engineers. But you could build a bridge, using that same design, but obviously you would be taking advantage of, computer software that wasn't available back then, new steel technologies, new construction and fabrication techniques that just weren't available 50 years ago.
What does that mean? And Matt Bullock, feel free to jump in here too. What does it mean, structurally obsolete?
Functionally obsolete.
Sorry.
It's the best way to sort of describe it is to compare it to other things that are built and manufactured, like cars and homes, et cetera. The safety standards and the building codes for those types of products are improved over time, and the same goes for bridges. Eventually you reach a point where the bridge is no longer able to accommodate the modern traffic requirements. Obviously, traffic has grown and exploded over the past 50 years, as have the size of trucks and things like that. So, that's a classification that a lot of people read more into than sometimes it is what it means. But it's primarily from a federal perspective, a funding categorization, and it allows certain types of work to be financed through federal bridge funds.
What about the Kennedy and Clark bridges? Are they similarly classified?
Yes, I believe the Kennedy is both structurally deficient and functionally obsolete. Best way to, as Will already mentioned, the functionally obsolete is, if we were going to be building a bridge today, we'd make sure the lanes were wide enough, the shoulders were wide enough, and had all the safety features that we'd want to put into a bridge today. The Kennedy, for example, years ago, we did a reconfiguration of the lanes such that there's 4 northbound and 3 southbound. Whereas we took out shoulders to do that, put a median barrier wall in there, that pretty much makes it no longer functional as far as having clear zones and safety and shoulders and so forth. So if you think about your old 8-track player, you may have sitting in the basement, it may still work and may still play your 8-tracks, but you're not going to have an 8-track on the shelf right now. You're going to have a CD player or a DVD player or such. So that's a functionally obsolete piece of technology. So similar comparison there.
And what do you mean structurally deficient?
Structurally deficient means there's several key components to a bridge. You have substructure, you have the deck, you have the superstructure, and so forth. If one of those components is deficient meaning it's not ideal, it's fair or poor and not good or excellent, then the whole bridge gets a structurally deficient label.
And I would think that people hearing that who might be driving over those bridges would give them some cause for concern.
There shouldn't be. There's you could have a an element as one of the deck beams or the deck surface itself. For example, the Kennedy Bridge deck is in pretty deplorable condition as far as the concrete goes. That would be getting a poor rating, but it does not mean it's not a safe bridge or it's going to fall down. So that would give it a structurally deficient rating.
And could there be any repairs to the bridge at this point while the traffic is being rerouted?
The Kennedy deck is a rehab project we have ongoing as we speak. We don't expect to roll that out and probably until the spring and most likely after the Derby.
All right, and one way to keep traffic off the bridge or just to cut down on traffic in general is to use public transit. Barry Barker, I want to turn to you. What is TARC doing now, and what sort of changes have you seen since the bridge is closed?
Well, what we've seen, we've got four park and ride lots in southern Indiana, and we've seen increased usage at those. Some of what we've done is not so much change routes as we've decoupled routes so that we can make sure that if someone's depending on a bus leaving on time, that it leaves on time, or so they can take an earlier bus and so forth. It's taking a little bit longer, quite a bit longer, depending upon the condition at the time, to get across the river. But you know what we'd suggest is folks take the bus and then they can take a break, essentially, and relax. But we have got extra buses staged to make sure that we are at least leaving on time. Now, what we've gotten, we've scared a couple of folks because they suddenly found themselves on a route that they're not used to. And what we're doing is monitoring what's happening with the traffic, what the police departments are opening or closing. And so it may run a little bit differently, but it'll get to the destinations that people are looking for.
And we have a few questions. Callers calling in asking some different alternatives for transportation. Ron in Louisville. Hello, Ron.
Hello. I've noticed that there's a bridge just south or downstream from west, I guess it's the Clark Bridge. It's hardly ever used. The train goes over a few times a day. And most time it's open. Looks like you could run a passenger train from, say, where the old Colgate plant is to down around 15th Street. Then people can hop on a bus and go downtown. You can carry thousands of people over that sucker every day. And start that pretty soon.
Yeah, I've actually been on a train over that bridge. And it was a typical Saturday morning excursion where no one was in a particular hurry. Ultimately, may have trains on that bridge carrying folks. The logistics of getting that up and running, and there's something we refer to in my business as sort of the first mile, last mile, is how do you get folks, for example, that rail bridge comes across, and it's, I believe, like 14th and Market. So then how do you get folks from 14th and Market to where they need to go? You know, similarly, at the other end, can you provide sufficient park and ride space and so forth? But that's certainly an option that, dependent upon the length of the closure and the situation we face, may become more viable.
So that is possible then, to answer Ron's question.
Well, you can bring it across. What you've got to identify is all of the equipment, who's going to operate it, who's going to pay for it.
An extensive amount of work just to set that up.
Just then. to get to day one, to get to run one.
All right, and then another caller, Trudy, on the line. Hello, Trudy. You have a question about transportation.
Yes, I do. I'm thinking of a few solutions. The first is of permanent ferry system, because I'll have to say I'm a little bit concerned about a lot of the earth changes that we've been seeing out there. I think that just really almost any tremor from the New Madrid Fault could render all of our bridges obsolete. So I, you know, rather than just the water taxi idea, an actual ferry system might be a good idea. And in between now and the repair of the bridge, what's keeping people from walking or cycling across that bridge? Would that really actually cause too much of a load, or would it be terribly dangerous?
Will, would you like to answer that?
I'll answer the second part of that question. We're not allowing our contractors, for the most part, out on that second span of the bridge where the closure was necessary. So, I'm glad people are thinking creatively, and that's the type of creative thinking that we'll need as we try to work through this. That's obviously a question that's been asked, and we don't determine that it's safe for traffic. We really don't determine it's safe for really any traffic. We've got a minimal amount of contractors out there working in the area of the crack that was discovered to try to determine the best way to repair it. But other than that, most of the work that the contractors and consultants are doing is occurring on the span closest to the Indiana side.
And I'll add in that there is a temporary ferry service right now on the Spirit of Jefferson. It's a dollar each way from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. and from 3 p.m. to 5:15 p.m. It's in a two-week trial right now. There's some more information on our website, wfpl.org. A caller is asking JR in Lanesville about using pontoon bridges, like in Vietnam. Is that a feasible option? Is that even desirable? Anyone could jump in there.
Well, not my course, but
presumably that would block the river, right?
It would block the river, and then you have a problem with the Coast Guard, the Corps of Engineers, and those tugboats that are going back and forth with the barges.
Is traffic so bad that you would need a pontoon bridge right now, Lieutenant Sweeney?
I don't think so. And as I said when I spoke earlier, the traffic plan so far has been running beautifully, considering we're missing a bridge that took 80,000 people a day across it. We ended our morning rush and yesterday's afternoon rush a little earlier than we normally did. Again, it started earlier, and that's an inconvenience, but it certainly doesn't warrant the kind of changes that, like a pontoon bridge, that would be impractical, I think, in any situation with our river traffic. And I don't know anybody who does pontoon bridges. I don't know anything about them.
Seattle,
I've seen a bridge too
Seattle's
far.
Seattle's got a couple.
Oh, Seattle. Okay.
Yeah. We'll turn. We're edging in right now on our break, but I want to turn to Stu in Louisville, making sure I'm hitting the right line here. Stu, hello. You have a question.
Yes. The 2010 Wilbur Smith tolling study indicates that large volumes of traffic will choose the free Sherman-Minton Bridge when it's the only non-toll bridge. Is this causing a reevaluation of the full Ohio River Bridges project, the extravagant East End approach, and the priorities in that project?
Will, would you like to answer that?
In terms of the bridge just being closed on Friday, at this point, it's been really more focused on ensuring traffic flowing and on trying to be able to get that crossing repaired and reopened. So, it's still too early at this point to really say, what impacts that would have.
And we're going to have to take a break right now. This is our first break. 502-814-8255 is the number to call, or news@wfpl.org to ask your question. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook at WFPL News. And as we just heard, any talk about bridges in Louisville is going to bring up the Ohio River Bridges Project. Philip Bailey talked with Bridges Authority Chairman Steve Schultz about what the shutdown means for the ORBP. Let's hear that.
What has been your reaction to the closure of the Sherman-Minton Bridge?
Well, obviously it was a shock, I guess, as probably most people reacted or had that reaction. It quickly turned to admiration for our close partners at the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet, the Indiana Department of Transportation, the governor's offices, and the mayor's office in terms of the care and professionalism with which they approached a very difficult situation. And by all accounts, they've been doing a tremendous job.
The abrupt closure of the 50-year-old span has created many reactions. From the Bridges Authority's perspective, what does this closure highlight in your view?
I think it just highlights that how important cross-river mobility is for the community, for the states. we know that in terms of our project, that lies at the heart of the purpose and need for what our mandate is, which is to deliver a financial plan for the Ohio River Bridges project. But I think this is another example of how much this community and this region relies on the ability to have access across the river.
Are you concerned at all that maintenance of the current infrastructure, meaning the Sherman Mitten Bridge, could take precedent over the Ohio River Bridges project?
I'm not concerned because we're focused on what our mandate is and our process, and we're working tirelessly to do what it takes to move forward with that. And the fact-finding stage is still obviously is what we're in right now. Don't know what will need to be done, but at the appropriate time, we'll engage with the states on the extent to which that has an impact on the Ohio River Bridges project, whether the authority, for example, might have a role in whatever solution would be for the Sherman Minton, but not concerned presently because we're so focused on our process and moving forward with it.
Is there any anticipation or plan B from the Bridges Authority just in case the Sherman Minton closure does impact the timeline of the Bridges project?
Well, the Sherman Minton closure happened toward the close of business on Friday, and this is Wednesday morning, so we haven't deliberated as an authority with regard to developing a plan B. But I will say that as the authority, we like to say we're the facts people, and so we're going to deal with whatever the facts are. We're still in the fact-finding phase, or the states, I should say, are in the fact-finding phase in terms of what is going to be involved with the getting the Sherman Minton back into service as rapidly as possible, and we know that they're doing whatever it takes to make that happen. But mostly they're evaluating the situation, and so we will remain flexible when it's determined what needs to be done by the experts. I suspect that we will be brought into a conversation with the state sponsors in terms of how we go about doing what it is that needs to be done. That is, with the authority having a role in the Ohio River Bridges project, to the extent that a solution, whatever the solution might be, is found for the Sherman Minton Bridge. If there is a role for the authority in that solution, I'm sure we'll have conversations with the state sponsors about that.
Support for WFPL comes from the Kentucky School of Art at Spalding University at the corner of 3rd and Breckenridge, hosting an open house this Saturday from 11 till 3, featuring a tour, teacher meet and greet, refreshments, and more. Details at 618-4600 or kentuckyschoolofart.org. From BC Plumbing, specializing in the renovation and restoration of older homes, their goal is to provide exceptional, timely service for all of their residential and commercial clients. Additional information in the Leo's Reader's Choice Edition and bcplumbing.net.
You're listening to a WFPL News special on the closure of the Sherman Minton Bridge. We'll hear from U.S. Congressman John Yarmuth later on in the hour. And coming up later today on Point, Bank of America will slash 30,000 jobs. We'll look at the deep turbulence in the banking industry. Tomorrow, another WFPL News special. We'll hear from JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens. She's been on the job for about a month, and we'll take your questions as well.
And good afternoon. Welcome back to a WFPL News special on the Sherman Minton Bridge closure. I'm Gabe Bullard. With me in the studio are Matt Bullock, Louisville Chief District Engineer for the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet, Barry Barker, Executive Director of the Transit Authority of River City, and Lieutenant Doug Sweeney from the Louisville Metro Police Department. And also now joining us by phone is Congressman John Yarmuth. Hello, Congressman.
Hello, Gabe.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
So we'll turn to you. This does bring up some questions that would be under your purview. First of all, how does the Sherman Minton Bridge fit into this larger message we're hearing now, especially coming from the White House, about crumbling infrastructure and the president's jobs plan?
Well, I mean, this is as vivid a case in point as you could possibly have. This is exactly what the president was talking about, and this situation is replicated thousands of times throughout our thousands and thousands of cases throughout the country right now, and it's going to require a massive federal commitment to modernize these bridges and make sure they're safe. So it is exactly the point that he was making, and unfortunately, we're the ones that are finding out first how real these situations are. You know, you can make a speech and talk about deteriorating infrastructure, and that's kind of abstract. And the people in our community now know that this is real. It's not just a perceived or imaginary threat.
And have you spoken specifically with anyone from the administration or with anyone in the White House about this?
Well, we've spoken with people at the White House. I spoke personally with Secretary LaHood, the Secretary of Transportation, yesterday. And then I've spoken with virtually all of the members, the chairs, and the ranking Democrats on the committees that are relevant to potential funding needs to either fix or replace the Sherman Mitten.
So if necessary, are you prepared to ask for emergency funding?
Yes, there's an interesting provision in the law that gets a little bit complicated, but basically, in order to get emergency funding right under the statutory language, the bridge would actually have to collapse. So the threat of a collapse is not enough. So what we've been doing is we've been having conversations about how to alter that language in a continuing resolution funding measure, which will be up in the next couple of weeks, to accommodate this type of threat. It's not unprecedented. They have done it before. But where there is a real perceived disaster, a potential disaster, that you could get emergency relief. And so it's going to require some change in the statute as well as the actual dollars.
Now, this also takes out a section of Interstate 64, and it's something we haven't heard much talk about, that this is an interstate that connects Virginia to Missouri. Have you talked with other congressmen, other senators from any of the other states, from Virginia, West Virginia, Indiana, or Illinois?
Well, I've talked with Nick Rahal, who's a representative from West Virginia. I have not talked to anybody from Virginia or Illinois yet, but again, I've talked with Hal Rogers, who's chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, and Hal stands ready, I think, to work with us. Norm Dix from Washington, who's the ranking Democrat on the Appropriations Committee, and that's the chief funding committee. But no, I have not, and I've talked to Todd Young, obviously, from Indiana.
Have you talked with Senator McConnell?
Have not talked specifically to Senator McConnell, although our offices have spoken, and we have later today a conference call with people at the Department of Transportation to again see what the possibilities are.
The conversation about infrastructure spending has become more and more politicized lately, especially with this jobs plan. Senator McConnell, of course, coming out in opposition to it in the past for various reasons. Senator Paul issued a statement saying it should be offset by cuts elsewhere. Is this an issue you think is going to become politicized?
Well, if people don't get the fact that you cannot talk about jobs without talking about infrastructure after this situation, then it ought to be politicized, and I'd be happy to be the first one to politicize it. This is critical. This is what government is all about. These are the things that nobody else can do. The private sector can't do this. So this is the essence of government. This is what the not just the people of Kentucky and Indiana, but the people of the United States expect government to respond to. And there's no getting around that. So if Senator McConnell and Senator Paul want to continue to resist the kind of essential investments in infrastructure, that it deserves to be politicized.
All right, we're going to have to take another break here. Please stay with us, Congressman. We'll be right back. You're listening to a WFPL News special on the Sherman-Minton Bridge. 502-814-8255 is the number to call to ask a question of one of our guests.
Support for WFPL comes from Fox Hollow Farm, offering a grass-fed beef cooking class for simple recipes to use at home. This evening from 6 to 8:30, a Fox Hollow dinner will follow the class, 15 minutes from downtown Louisville. Details and directions at foxhollow.com or 241-9674. From Jewish Orthopedic Care, offering minimally invasive hip and knee replacement to help people get back to their active, pain-free lives. More information from Jewish Orthopedic Care at 800-333-2230.
And good afternoon. You're listening to a WFPL News special on the closure of the Sherman-Minton Bridge and the traffic problems it's caused. We'll have a rebroadcast of this special coming up tonight at 9 o'clock. And coming up tomorrow, another WFPL News special, this time featuring Jefferson County Public School Superintendent Donna Hargens. She's been on the job for a little more than a month now. She began the school year with a 90-day plan. We'll find out how things are going there. This is WFPL.
And good afternoon. You're listening to a WFPL news special on the Sherman-Minton Bridge. I'm Gabe Bullard. With me in the studio are Matt Bullock, Louisville Chief District Engineer for the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet, Barry Barker, Executive Director of the Transit Authority of River City, and Lieutenant Doug Sweeney from the Louisville Metro Police Department. Joining us by phone, Congressman John Yarmuth and also Will Wingfield, spokesman for the Indiana Department of Transportation. And now also joining us to get the perspective of businesses and people living in New Albany is Roger Baylor, co-owner of the New Albanian Brewing Company. Roger, I want to ask you, have you noticed a change in your business now? You have two restaurants in New Albany. They were already for Louisvillians a few miles out of the way. Now they're many more miles out of the way.
I think it's a little bit too soon to draw any lasting conclusions from it. It's only been one weekend. So, you know, what I'm hearing are, like everybody else in our area right now, there's a lot of complaints about how long it takes to get from one place to another. I don't, we were down a little bit over the weekend, but I don't know. You know, there's a range there. I see no reason to get upset about it quite yet.
Have you talked with other New Albany businesses?
Yeah, we had a meeting yesterday morning downtown. It was fairly well attended. I think that most of us look at this as, we know that it's going to be some dislocation. We know that people don't like to change their habits, and it's hard to get to new things and new routes and everything like that. But I believe that most of us look at this as being this really once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to shift a few paradigms in terms of how people in our own neighborhood view us and to make New Albany into something, to continue the revitalization we were already doing. Everybody can focus on the negatives, but there's a lot of positives to this, too, from our perspective.
And we had talked earlier in the week about this could be the opportunity, and you mentioned it a little bit there, to lock in more local customers on the Indiana side. Are there more efforts underway to do that?
Well, I think they're going to be. It's going to take a few days. I think it's not like anyone's waiting and seeing right now. They are being, I think, cautious and taking a look at the numbers and the customer counts and checking things out. But we've been trying to implement some things anyway. We have a independent business association we're trying to start called NA First, or New Albany First. We're trying to do various things to instill this concept of local. And if this doesn't, you know, concentrate thinking in that direction, I'm not sure I know what would.
All right. Thank you very much, Roger Baylor from the New Albanian Brewing Company. We're going to have to let you go so we can get to a few calls of people coming in. We've seen a number of people are asking questions about various transportation options. And then also we have Breck on the line in Louisville. Breck, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, you have a question about bridge maintenance.
Sure. Thanks, Gabe. Just one comment and the question. The first comment is just as on the ground. My kid's school, for example, we actually are making my carriage house available to one of our kid's school's families. Both of them work for Humana. They live in Indiana. They've got a two-hour commute now to get their kid to school. And we're actually opening up our carriage house to allow them to live there for the next month or two until this situation sorted out. So I think there's a lot of that going on, a lot of frustration there. That's the comment. The question, and with respect to Congressman Yarmuth, is pretty simple. It's a very, instead of a 20,000-foot view, I'm down actually on the pavement. And my question is, since we are actually shut down, and the engineer spoke earlier that this is not a catastrophic bridge failure, but since it's shut down, instead of waiting till the spring, which I think is what I heard, to take care of the concrete and the pavement, I mean, while it's shut down right now and all the traffic disruption is already occurring, why can't we go ahead and repave the surface now while it's already shut down? Why have a second disruption sometime in the future? That's the question.
Is that an answer for Will or Matt? Would you want to take that?
I think he's referring to the Kennedy Bridge paving that I referred to earlier. That the Sherman.
I might be mistaken. I was just wondering if it was already shut down. Any repairs that can be done to the surface now? Why are we not doing them now while we're already disrupted?
All right.
Now, I was referring to the Kennedy Bridge. It's got a bad surface deck on it, a riding surface that we will not be able to work on it until probably after Derby of 2012.
And on that topic, a few comments coming in from Facebook and email. People are asking, are there long-term problems being considered, such as issues with winter? Is the salt road, could that contribute to any sort of cracks or problems with the pavement even? And what might happen as we head into winter?
Well, salt is, the chlorides are corrosive to steel, and as long as you keep up with your inspections and you keep the joints in good condition, then the salt is just a secondary issue.
And there are also a few questions coming in. One we'll take from Steve in Louisville. Steve, you're asking about an alternate transit route.
Yes, this is more in the long term, but we have the Big Four Bridge there that's being developed as a pedestrian walkway. I was just wondering if any consideration was given to using the pilings on that bridge for building the new bridge. It may require some minor rerouting, but it would seem to me that if we are going to build a bridge and those pilings were adequate, that would certainly speed the process along.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Anyone here wants to jump in on that?
I give a shot at that. I don't know the detail of the study that was done within the full investigation for the Louisville Bridges project, whether the Big Four Bridge piers were in consideration for a new river crossing. The only example I can think of is up in Madison, Indiana, Milton, Kentucky, where we're doing a new bridge now. We're actually using the existing substructure, the piers there, but we had to do extensive testing on those, coring through them all the way through to the bedrock, and we were actually putting a new sleeve of concrete on the outside to increase the strength and to widen the new bridge.
And I think there was another factor, by the way, Gabe. I mean, it's hard. This is John Yarmuth. I don't know that the question of whether it would be adequate to support a traffic bridge would be one thing, but also the routing. The farther east you go from the Kennedy Bridge, the more you're getting into areas of Jeffersonville, in my understanding, that are of historic and other, you know, kind of character issues about the Jeffersonville downtown. So that may be a factor. Plus, you'd obviously have to figure out how to connect it to major thoroughfares. So, I'm not sure that's probably would be a viable option, even if the supports could take on traffic.
And there are a number of bridges people perhaps passing through Louisville or maybe looking from downtown or from southern Indiana would see a number of bridges. We have Don on the line asking about using another one of those spans that you can see. Hello, Don.
Hi. I was wondering about the old K&I Bridge. It used to be a toll bridge. I know the railroad still uses it as a way to get their vehicles back and forth. The structure's still there. I remember as a teenager driving across that bridge, paying the 10 or 20 cent toll to do that.
All right, and Matt, is that you again, or Barry? Perhaps
I believe that's the one that Barry was referring to earlier,
the previous one. And is there, you had talked a little bit about the traffic plan and some of the congestions happening, Lieutenant Sweeney. So at this point, you're saying there's no need that you see to open up another bridge in the long term, or to try to even do that? There's, of course, a
well, we've been working on it for 40 years. On what do you consider long term?
or in trying to find other ways across the river. We can mention also 58 people used the ferry this morning. We just got that report from Erica Peterson upstairs. Of course, that wasn't actually an option until about 3 o'clock yesterday that people knew about it. But that we can mention that. Do you think, though, at this point that other ways across the river would have to be explored?
From my point of view and the way things have been going so far, I mean, it depends on the duration of this closure. Long term, or for me, long term is in, I don't know, excess of 6 months to a year. I think in a matter of a few months is certainly a great inconvenience. But if things continue to flow as well as they are now, I think the solutions we have in place will stand.
And Barry?
Yeah, I think we're always looking at transportation opportunities and what's going to happen in the future. I'm not so sure that we're at the point yet where we're saying this particular incident drives any of those and causes us to move out on a particular option. But the suggestions that the callers are making are certainly worthy of consideration. And when you start looking long-term, and long-term in my business is more like 10, 20, 30 years, you know, these are things that we've got to look at and look at how we provide for the mobility needs of this community well into the future.
And I would like to say that the any vehicle that can, how many people does a TARC bus hold?
Well, we can get 50 folks on it.
So you're eliminating probably, if you know, 25 cars or thereabouts. Certainly that is always an option and always has been in this city is mass transit, and not only without a bridge, but with gas prices and some of the earth concerns that people have, I think TARC's always a great option that helps reduce congestion on the roadways, and hopefully more people will explore that because of this bridge closure.
And there is an agency, KIPTA, that does some studies of the environmental impact you'd mentioned a little bit of rerouting these cars through downtown. However, that study is not yet underway. And it's my understanding from Erica Peterson's reporting upstairs that they have not yet decided whether to do that, that that's something they'd have to wait until after they have more of a prognosis on the Sherman-Minton Bridge. So if anyone wondering about that, I think we got a few people writing in asking about that as well. I also want to say, on the topic of jobs and employers on the Louisville side, if you go to our website, WFPL.org, in just a minute, you'll hear Devin Katayama's interview with Marvin Hill from Humana about some of the things happening there. They have, I believe it's 1,900 employees on the Indiana side. Real quick, we have about a minute left. If anyone has any last thoughts on what the Sherman-Minton closure has taught us, either about transportation in Louisville or infrastructure in general, feel free to speak up.
Well, it's become a very unique situation in a way. We do have some experience and worked with Lieutenant Sweeney and Barry Barker here in Louisville Metro on some of our large construction projects on the interstates, where we had to close interstate for as much as 30 days. And the difference there is we had 5 or 6 months to get with the public and come up with plans, and this is something that was given to us, and we had to deal with it very quickly.
And I'd like to say that the intelligent transportation systems has really shown itself to be great right here, and everybody's working together to accomplish the mission.
Well, what's incredible is the fact that everybody's been working together. I mean, the level of cooperation, including motorists and bus passengers and others, has been incredible.
All right, and for that extra level of cooperation in Congress, we'll have to see how that's going to play out.
Congressman.
I'm really sorry, I do have to cut you off here. We have just 15, 20 seconds left. Have to say thank you to our guest, Congressman Yarmuth, though we didn't get that last word in there. Also, Matt Bullock with the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet, Barry Barker with TARC, Lieutenant Doug Sweeney with the LMPD, Will Wingfield with NDOT, Roger Baylor for joining us. This WFPL News special was produced by the WFPL News staff with Philip Bailey and Devin Katayama. Also, our production team is led by Brad Yost and Laura Ellis. Joe Dorso running the boards. More information and full audio at WFPL.org. I'm Gabe Bullard.
Why's that confounded bridge?
Support for